Hello and welcome to the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. My name is Goff and today we have a very special guest. He is a supreme athlete, or I should say was a supreme athlete. He was the Australian, well not record holder, he was the Australian champion for the over 40s, 50s, 60s and 70s bodybuilding championships, which is 40 years of dominance. I mean, I'm only 38, so it's longer than I've been alive. It's a bloody good effort. And David Berry is his name. Welcome to the podcast, Dave.
Well, thank you, Goff, and it looks like you got most of that right. That's good.
Well, what did I get wrong?
No, I said most of it.
Okay, fair enough. No, if we need to correct it, because you were also, am I correct in saying you were Mr. Olympia at one time?
The Natural Mr. Olympia, the very first competition that was held for natural bodybuilders in Greece in 1998, and I managed to win my age category in that as well.
Wow, very, very cool. Now, what, I mean, bodybuilding's not a sport that people probably naturally go towards. Why did you choose bodybuilding as a sport?
Well, funnily enough, I took my then-girlfriend, who is now my wife of 56 years, to see a movie with Steve Reeves in it, and he was knocking down temples and things like that in ancient Greece. And I thought that, wow, to have arms that big impressed the ladies as it did in that movie, it'd be a good start for me.
fair enough. Now, take us through, because it's fascinating to me, because people would assume, obviously, it's very, very hard work to be able to look like that. Take us through general training regime of leading up to a competition. What kind of training would you be undertaking?
Well, the hardest part in leaning up for a competition is what you can and cannot eat. We usually restrict our diet to much more of a higher protein diet. Certainly carbohydrates are very necessary, but you also have to work hard on the exercise regime. And a lot of this would include aerobic activity as well. So as you get closer and closer to the day, you have to get leaner and leaner. Good bodybuilders will probably reach 4 or 5% in levels of body fat, and that's very hard not only to get to, but certainly to maintain, and probably not even healthy to maintain after the competition.
Well, that's one thing that you and I were discussing one day, because during all the lockdown COVID stuff, a good friend of mine was taking me for runs. Makes me sound like a dog, doesn't it? She took me for a run. No, but I, obviously being blind, I require a sighted guide. So she and I used to go for runs and to keep myself fit while all the gyms and everything were shut. And I remember having a chat to you about this, and I was amazed when you told me that before a competition, you would be going for like 5K runs to lean down. And because naturally you think bodybuilding, you think you do nothing but lift weights.
That's very true. And you have to lean up. Otherwise, the definition won't be prevalent. And you might have the biggest muscles, but if you can't see them because of layers of body fat, then you don't have the definition, then you don't win.
So what does, just generally speaking, what does running do for you?
It burns calories the same as every other activity that you do, but it was always considered that if you had your heart rate in a certain training range, then you would be more likely to burn calories from body fat rather than from instant energy provided from glucose and things like that. So it was around about 80% of your maximum heart rate. Whereas anaerobic activity, which is what you would call weightlifting and pumping iron, is in a much lower heart rate than that.
And how many hours a day would you spend, like leading up to, like let's say you're 10 weeks or so out from a competition, how many hours a day are you lifting weights?
Oh, probably no more than 1 hour.
Oh, really?
A day. No, I found that it was just as important to lift the weights as it was to do the cardio activity as well. So in that probably 8 to 10 weeks out from a competition, you'd have to concentrate heavily on the aerobic activity as well as training with the weights.
Now you mentioned this a little bit a second ago. Can you explain to people out there who might not understand the difference between lifting weights and then doing cardio-based training? So what it does for your body. So you've got two choices, let's say. You could go and do an hour of weights, or you could do an hour like on the exercise bike and treadmill. What difference would it happen to your body with those two different types of exercise?
Well, of course, the weights are designed to increase your muscle size. Whereas the cardio activity, particularly in the heart rate range, is to try and burn the body fat surrounding the muscles, without destroying the muscles at the same time. So it's got to be a fine balance. Sometimes you find people might go too hard and not only burn calories from body fat, but they might burn glucose, which might also come from the muscles as well.
Now going to your competition days, your competitive days, what would be your proudest moment? Because you competed for well over 40 years. So what sort of stands out in your mind as something where you're really, really proud of what you achieved?
Well, the very first competition I went in was the Novice Mr. Queensland. I was the oldest competitor in there. Most of them were 18, 19, 20. I was 40 or 41, I think. And to win that, I was very proud of that. Another proud moment was when one of my sons, Greg, won Novice Mr. Queensland 19 years later than I did.
Did you compete against him?
No, I didn't, and probably just as well because he would have beaten me easily. But to sum up in total, the ultimate competition was the Mr. Olympia in Greece, where we were able to have some photos taken in the ruins of the Temple of Apollo in Greece. And the actual competition was held at Corinthos, which was the site of the very first Olympic Games. So that probably stands as the highest mark in my career.
That's very cool, man. Very cool. And I've actually, you've shown me a photo of you posing there. It's, it's a very, very cool thing indeed. Now, one thing that I think people get wrong, to be honest, is people train and go to the gym and it's all about physical appearance. And I don't like that because I train for mental health reasons first and then physical health second, and appearance doesn't even enter my thought process. So can you maybe explain about the happy little endorphins that start running around your body and how that can help your mental health, how exercise can really help you mentally?
Yes, definitely. Exercise provides a feel-good activity, particularly if you have a goal in mind. If you're 120 kilos and suddenly you look in the mirror and say, "Way, I'm too heavy, I need to lose some," when you've lost 5 or maybe 10 kilos, the endorphins really kick in and say, I'm really enjoying this. Not only am I fitter, I'm healthier, I can move better, I can run around a lot more easily, I'm not getting as tired. So there's lots of benefits from that point of view. But conversely, if you looked at a person that had been ill or sick and was underweight and really needed to put some muscles on, then as they increased their strength and their size and maybe took their bench press from 50 kilos to 80 kilos, they also have the same sort of sensation because it's a reward for their efforts.
Yeah, so when I really enjoy my exercise, and when I leave the gym, I feel really great. You know, I find that my concentration is better. I find that my decision-making is better. I find that all of those positive effects come out of doing that exercise first thing in the morning. Maybe you could chat about a little bit about that, maybe?
Yes, that's very true. I think also there's a very good interaction with other people at the gymnasium. Often if you have a training partner that can set a little bit of a standard that you might try and catch or beat or equal, whatever that might be. But it's quite right. You do feel so much better. You feel as though all those muscles and joints have actually done some work, and you walk out of there 10 foot tall instead of the 3 foot tall when you walked in there.
Absolutely. No, I really do encourage folks out there to train because it really helps you mentally and obviously your physical health as well. But I just really think it really helps with your, like I said, your concentration, all that sort of stuff, and good decision making. Now, you owned a gym for the best part of 30 years. So obviously that's a good way to get a free gym membership is by owning one.
It was an expensive way, but it turned out to be quite a good way in the finish. We had two gyms. We had one in Brisbane and one on the Gold Coast for about 5 years. We sold the one in Brisbane and then moved to live on the Gold Coast, and we remained in that gym for more than 25 years. And it was a well-known establishment. We had people come from all over Australia to train there. And even internationally, we had people like Serge Newbray, who was a very popular name in those days, come and train at our gym there. It was good.
So what would be some of the keys? Because, I mean, you do see gyms come and go pretty quickly in the community. What would be some of the keys to running a successful gymnasium?
I think, Goff, what we did was we ran it as a personal family gymnasium. And my two sons and my wife and myself ran the gym. We competed with other members in competitions. We trained with other members to help them get more motivation. And that worked very well. So if you take that personal interest in your members, as sometimes a lot of gyms don't. But if you do that, I think you'll have customers coming back forever and ever. We only had a standard base of customers in our Brisbane gym of up to about 1,000 members, but we had the same 1,000 for the whole time that we had the gym. On the Gold Coast, it was different because there were a lot more visitors to the Gold Coast, so our transient population was much higher, but we still had a base core of about 1,000 members that trained there for 10, 15, 20 years. Perhaps one of the highlights of that was when I engaged a fellow as a member at about 24 years of age, and 16 years later he was married and brought his 16-year-old son in to train at the gym as well. And that to me was a real compliment. I was happy with that.
That's very cool, man. Very cool indeed. And would you suggest in that case that gyms can not always obviously, can breed positive interactions, which again helps you in so many ways? It's just if you turn it into a positive atmosphere, it's successful as a business and you can make money, but it will help the members with their exercise. Like you said, you did, I remember saying, you and I were chatting one time and you were telling me about chin-up competitions and things like that. Yes. You used to do. Would that be a way to, you know, keep the interest and keep the positive interactions going to help people with their fitness, but also to keep members coming back?
Oh, most definitely. We had a tremendous interaction with our members, and not only chin-up competitions, we had push-up competitions. We had rowing competitions, all of which were popularly recorded and noted on our notice board so people could see how they were standing in the competitions. But we also did a lot socially. We did a lot to promote the gym and cruising some crazy stuff like the belly flop competition and the Birdman rally and things like that. We won a bed race competition in Brisbane, and the trip was to go to Hawaii to compete against about 25 other nations in the Carol Kai annual bed race. So those sort of things raised a lot of popularity. We had parties to celebrate not only our departure to Hawaii, but on the arrival home again. We used to have fancy dress Christmas parties. So the more interaction you could have with your members, even on a social level, helped you in the gym industry.
And again, that helped the members in regards to their positive experience in the gym, which keeps them coming back for more, yeah?
So, absolutely. Yes, very true.
Mm-hmm. So just to get a bit of general advice for people out there who, might be, let's take a few different situations. So let's say somebody is really overweight, like they're 40 kilos overweight. What would be one or two key things they could do to get that jump start into the fitness so they could drop that first few kilos, get that positive momentum going? How would they get that positivity going?
Well, the first thing would be to join a gym. That would be a good start. Once they've done that, review not only their exercise program, but what they are eating. Because most people that are overweight, whether it be slightly or a long way overweight, is due to the fact that they maybe just eat too much or love eating particular foods at the wrong time of day or whatever it might be. So high-level cardio activity, but at a slow pace, would be the way to start, gradually easing into it, because the worst thing you would want to do is have a person that might be 125 kilos hurt themselves in the very first month of their training, and therefore that would just chase them away from the place rather than encourage them to stay.
So when you say cardio, you're talking about the stationary bike and the treadmill, so get them doing not maybe a heavy run on the treadmill, but, you know, a gentle, a fast-paced walk into more of a jog, that kind of a situation?
Absolutely, an aerobic activity. And that could be either on the rowing machine, slowly, on the stationary bike or treadmill or a cross trainer or something of that nature.
And so then let's go to the other end of the spectrum. So you've lost a whole bunch of weight, but you've got that last little bit that annoys everybody that just won't come off. What would be a few little tips for those folks who just have that extra 1 or 2 kilos they want to drop? What sort of things could they think about doing?
I don't think there's an easy fix to that. The few words that I could say was don't stop. Keep trying. Keep trying to lose your weight. It'll become harder as you have less to lose. The first few kilos will come off fairly quickly, and the last ones will be, you know, quite a challenge. But you can ease up because you have more range of freedom in not having to lose as much as quickly as you might want. But perseverance is the best thing to do there, and stay with it.
Fantastic. Now, one last thing before we go. You have told me in the past you had an interaction with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Could you maybe take us tell us about that, please?
Yes, I would perhaps consider myself one of the very few people that have Arnold Schwarzenegger come up, tap him on the shoulder and introduce himself to me. I thought that was a classic at the time. He seems quite a nice guy, a real showman. It was at the 1980 Mr. Olympia in the Opera House in Sydney, and Arnold was a villain because in the posing lineup, when the judges called for a particular pose, like a double bicep pose, for instance, Arnold would strike a side chest pose. And of course, 7 out of 7 judges were all looking at Arnold and not at all the other people, and so was the audience. So Arnold, by default, got a lot of extra viewing of his physique. But prior to the competition starting, we had Mr. Australia competition, and I had a competitor in that as well. But I was also doing my international examination for the judging certificate to be able to judge international competitions. So I had the official jacket on, which had official judge written on the pocket, and it was a double-breasted jacket, which made me look very smart. And Arnold must have spotted this, but he didn't know who I was. I certainly knew who he was. He came up behind me, tapped me on the shoulder. I turned around and he said to me, "How do you do? My name is Arnold Schwarzenegger. What is your name?" And I nearly didn't know what to say, but I did tell him. And then we exchanged niceties for a while. And then he realised I was going to be a judge in the competition. So we parted ways as very good friends.
Are you sure he wasn't trying to, slip $100 into one of those double-breasted jacket pockets?
If he had, I would have given it back to him.
That's a very honest answer of you, David Berry. I'm very proud of you.
No doubt.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come and chat to us here at the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. I do appreciate your time.
It's a pleasure, Gough, and I'm quite honoured at the thought that you would even invite me. So I know we have social interaction in our gymnasium where we train now, and I hope that continues, and I hope it continued to beat most of your rowing times.
Not a chance. I'm a rowing champion sensation, but why don't you answer this question for us all? Because I'm a huge fan of the rowing machine. I love it because it's both a strength-based exercise and a cardio-based exercise, and I would doubt that there would be another piece of equipment in the gym quite like that. Would that be a fair statement to make?
That's a very fair statement, and probably 40 years ago somebody said to me, if ever you were shipwrecked on a desert island, what one piece of gym equipment would you take? And I said a Concept 2 rower, because it works every major muscle in your body as well as your heart and your lungs and your core at the same time. So it's the best overall exercise machine that you could possibly get. And the way you row on it, you're going to live to be 100.
Absolutely. But so just following on for that really quickly, would you say to someone who's new to a gym, one of the best things they could probably do is jump on a rowing machine? They don't have to break records and be, Hercules on it. But, I mean, would that be a great way for them to start because it does work the whole body? Would a rowing machine be a great piece of equipment for them to use?
Absolutely, provided they don't have any serious injuries like knee or lower back problems. But if they don't have any of those, the rowing machine will strengthen knees and lower backs and make a really good job of it. It's a great machine.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. The rowing machine is where it is at, apparently. So make sure you jump on one at some stage. And so that just about does it for us here at the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. Thank you again, Dave, for coming in and sharing your experience and tips. I do appreciate it. And make sure, of course, you leave a friendly comment in the comment section on whatever podcast app you might be listening on. And, of course, like, subscribe, follow and share and all of that kind of good stuff as well. BeerNutsProductions.com for all your entertainment needs. And we will speak to you next time. Bye for now.